This is the Jewish News Podcast, supported by Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Nicole Lampert, arts and entertainment journalist, and today we are discussing antisemitism in the theatre. This is the Jewish News Podcast. I'm Nicole Lampert. I'm an arts and entertainment journalist and an accidental activist against antisemitism. I say accidental because, like many of my guests today, I only became an activist when I saw that antisemitism was happening and few other people willing to speak up against it. I'm thrilled to be joined today by actress Tracy Ann Oberman, who first found fame in EastEnders, and Jewish fans will particularly know her from Friday Night Dinner and Ridley Road. She spent 4 years with the RSC and has written plays for Radio 4 and has been in talks with the Royal Court for some months about writing about her experiences of fighting antisemitism in the Labour Party. We also have actress Louisa Klein, who is best known for starring in Judge John Deed and Emmerdale and has spent 20 years working in the theatre. Adam Lentzen, a director and producer who runs his own musical theatre company and also specialises in special effects. And Murray Hecht, an actor and director and former Union Branch Chairman of Equity. Today we are discussing antisemitism in the theatre. This comes off the back of the Royal Court scandal in which a megalomaniac billionaire baddie in a new play was given the name Herschel Fink, even though the producers said he was not meant to be Jewish, with apparently no thought given to the trope that such an obviously Jewish name was signalling to its audience. I'm going to start with you, Tracy. Would you say there is a particular problem of antisemitism in the theatre world?
I would say that in terms of Jews in the theatre and Jews of working within the theatre industry, which I think is different to television and film industry, I think the theatre world sees itself as progressive, particularly subsidised theatre. And therein the problem lies, I think, with Jewish and Jewish identifying actors, performers, writers. So, yeah, in terms of two Jewish archetypal literary figures, both in plays and literature, which are the most well-known and universally acknowledged Jewish-British characters are Shylock and Fagin, both of whom fulfil certain negative stereotypes about Jews.
Has that continued down the ages?
I think the problem is, and I think that's what this whole situation has brought up, is what are our Jewish stories and what are our Jewish characters that we see? We are a small community and the majority of people in this country may not have met somebody Jewish, but what they will have read is about Shylock or Fagin because they're such popular stories. So already let's think about what the archetypes are of what we've seen as Jewish characters. They are the pushy Jewish mother, the BT adverts with Maureen Lipman. They're the nerdy Jewish son, you've got an ology. They are accountants and bankers. And for Jewish women, if you look in history, they've often been seen as the seductresses. They're this sort of evil, witchy seductress, or they're the innocent Jewish girl like Jessica who needs to be rescued from the difficult, evil, money-grabbing Jewish community, or they are the kind of pushy Jewish mother. Often our archetypes, the things that we see, come from America, and that is the Jap, the Jewish American princess, or the, again, the pushy Jewish New York overbearing mother, or the nerdy Jew like Woody Allen. And these are what we have all grown up with, and that is what the majority of people, I think, will talk about when they see it, or Holocaust survivors, or Fiddler on the Roof. And that is it. And we've got to change that. And I think that the Herschel Fink moment has blown that out the water, because we have to look at the stories that we're telling. I was recently in a thing on television called Ridley Road, and it really made an impact because here were strong Jewish working class sexy characters who were going about saving themselves and were fighting against anti-Semitism, and they were of the left. And there was a lot of amazing feedback because people hadn't seen characters like that before. And that is what you and I and most other Jews think of when we think of our community.
Can you talk about that left-wing aspect, which is inherent in the theatre?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, when it comes down to theatre, the problem here is because those subsidised theatres, more than the West End, those subsidised theatres think of themselves as progressive and left-wing, and the Royal Court more so. And as you know, I'm in very long conversations with Vicky at the moment to create a piece of work that will hopefully start to tackle that. And because if the Royal Court, who is at the epicenter of a theatre that summarises a progressive left theatre, who went so far after Black Lives Matter rose to the surface to have diversity workshops and workshops about unconscious bias, but didn't mention Jews or anti-Semitism, and then got themselves into a right old pickle with a character called Herschel Fink that was flagged up three times as having negative Jewish stereotypes, with a huge name, with a huge Jewish sounding name, with an actor who was always known as the Nose. So these three things combined have created a storm, and it's a really, really positive thing. So my experience as an actor is I've often gone into places when I was early on in my career in the early 90s where I had very curly Jew fro, as we call it, kind of Jewish curly hair. And I was often told, I remember by one casting person that they'd love to put me in their Jane Austen, but people didn't look like that in Jane Austen's times. I was often asked where I came from. I was told to change my name because my name, quote, sounded too Jewish, and you don't look enough like Anne Frank to be cast as Jewish in Jewish roles. I mean, this is the sort of bias that we're talking about. And so with Shylock and what I'm trying to do with The Merchant of Venice that I'm doing with Bridget Larmour, and which the community and theatre community and Jewish community have been so behind, is to reinvent that story by turning Shylock into a female Jewish woman of the East End, very much like my great-grandma and maybe your great-grandma. And these tough, strong women were often left widowed with their children and had to run the family business and their homes with an iron fist. And we've set it in the 30s against an Oswald Mosley, Nancy, Diana Cooper, Mitford background. And it's hopefully going to remind people about those Jewish working class women.
Adam, you became involved with this because of an example of anti-Semitism in the theatre, which became known as Falsetto Gate. Had you been involved in activism before this, or was this your first time?
I mean, I've always had opinions, but that felt like the first moment that I was speaking out for something other than kind of my opinions about theatre, I suppose. Yeah, and actually I remember the moment that I named it Falsetto Gate. I remember thinking, oh, I'm gonna actually get to name a gate, which felt pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, the personal backstory was I had been dealing with a cancer diagnosis. Don't worry, I'm fine. And it had sort of realigned me with my Jewish history a little bit, that sort of thing. I mean, I've always been from an Orthodox family, but not that religious. And it sort of realigned me with thoughts of existentialism and faith. And around the same time, this is important, around the same time, a musical that I greatly love called Falsettos was announced. And I noticed that it was being done without a single Jewish cast member or creative team member, from top to bottom. And it felt like a problem, but also it felt like a very clear version of that problem, which we see in smaller ways. I'd been talking with other Jewish artists for a while about other little problems, portrayals or castings or, writing issues. This just felt like it was a completely open and shut case of a complete exclusion of a minority in a story about them. And sort of musical theatre and a sort of post-illness fearlessness just sort of lined up and made me feel I could speak about it. So I, with a group of Jewish artists who I was in a WhatsApp group with, mostly sort of directors and writers, we kind of got together and wrote the first letter. I co-wrote it with a dramaturg writer called Sarah Siegel, and then there was other contributions. And we put it out and sort of began a period of conversation and activism. Quite unhappily, there was really no resolve with Falsetto Gate. The production company behind it never apologized. There was sort of no large-scale wider learning. There was no sort of institutions that weighed in on it or really spoke to it. There was, talk about it, and actually other minority groups were the first people to kind of ally themselves with its cause and say, we've been excluded. This is a clear case of exclusion.
you know, I carried on fighting on that long after the fumes, you know, the fuel had run out in a way. I was sort of a year later, 2 years later, sort of still bringing people back to that. And I think it did hit people's minds, but I don't think it led to any what I would call systemic changes on a large scale. And I found that frustrating, but, you know, in musical theatre, which is what I work in predominantly, tends to be not as thoughtful or as kind of interested in those conversations maybe as other parts of the sector. And for whatever reason, it sort of didn't pan out. Flash forward to a month ago, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, and a friend pointed out to me that a billionaire in a play at the Royal Court was called Herschel Finck. And it felt like these mechanisms within the sort of Jewish theatre community existed, and there was a sort of momentum from the past sort of two and a bit hopeless years. And so I kind of spoke to it on social media, and this time I'd say it achieved more widespread notice. I think potentially because the Royal Court is, you know, one of our biggest cultural institutions for theatre. It's one that has had a checkered history with regards to anti-Semitism and has also been leading the way on other progressive struggles, such No Grey Area, Me Too, Black Lives Matter. And by choosing to lead the way on other progressive struggles, it felt particularly potent that this had been missed by, you know, any of the many people who this script had been through. And so, yeah, I tweeted. It got a lot of steam behind it, and other people joined the conversation, and it sort of did turn into a big conversation. And unlike Celador, who produced Falsettos, the Royal Court responded, you know, they responded maybe too quickly, I would say. They apologized twice in one day, and both of those apologies were pretty lacking in nuance or reflection, or didn't seem to know exactly what they were apologizing for or exactly how to apologize. But I guess because of the conversations I've been in, you know, I reached out to the Royal Court. They followed me on Twitter already, so I could DM them, and they reached back, and I and a small group of artists have been having conversations with them, with Vicky, the artistic director. Since then, really, I've had three conversations now, which I well understand, and I well stress every time I have one, that we are not the only people you should be talking to, and that Jewish community is not a monolith, and that everyone has very distinct and varied opinions. But they opened the door. Who knows what's going to happen inside, but Celador didn't open the door. And I'm somewhat feeling like this could be more of a watershed moment than that was able to be. Not that they weren't connected and one didn't lead to the other. I always say that because everyone ignored Falsetto Gate, I think this is happening now. And I think that the industry rightfully deserves an existential crisis.
We came together as a community to fight Corbynism, which is a challenge for many people in the left. And this also came with a backdrop with the BLM movement pushing for minority voices. How much of an impact do you think both of these things have?
I guess I would say the progressive left, which is sort of where lots of theatre happens, has been a minefield. Whatever your type of Jewish background or practice might be, I think it led to a kind of minefield of complexity about how to identify whether I should out myself as Jewish, whether I should talk about myself, whether I can say things that speak to myself as a good Jew or a bad Jew. Like, do I have to say certain things in order to be accepted in those spaces?
And I think inevitably, it, you know, politics do end up in the rehearsal room just when you're getting to know people. And as you say, the progressive left is where the theatre world naturally sits. And that sort of anti-Semitism versus anti-Zionism or anti-Israel, it, you can't separate the two. And obviously what happened with Equity, with Murray and everything is a prime example of that. And I certainly know that I've been in rehearsal rooms in the past where, you know, what, I've been very, very self-conscious about talking about my views on Israel, my views as somebody who is Jewish. And I think in the last few years, and I'm sure Tracy's spoken about this with you, that the idea of sort of anti-Semitism within the Labour Party and everything. It's all become extremely complicated, and both for Jewish people and for non-Jewish people, inevitably politicised. And
I've heard a lot of stories similar to this because a lot of people contacted me when everything blew up with Equity. And as Louisa just quite rightly said, I know in my branch, a lot of the actors and performers and creatives they lean to the left and they do have take one side. So it's very difficult when you are Jewish, and some people who are Israeli, they don't want to get into the conversation. They don't want to have to admit it because they're straight away ostracised, and you know, they're asked questions that they don't want to have to answer. But it's wrong. We know it's wrong, but this is sadly what's happening, as we've seen, and lots of people have had examples of it.
Murray, could you talk about what happened with Equity for our listeners?
Yes, sure. So if we go back to May, I'll just set the context. If you remember, we had the convoy of cars driving through North London shouting awful anti-Semitic language, which I'm not going to repeat here. Rabbi ended up in hospital. The CST, the Community Security Trust, had the highest reported numbers of anti-Semitic attacks ever. While this was all going on, suddenly Equity decided to get involved. The president tweeted asking for everyone to sign a petition to introduce sanctions to Israel. And then the general secretary tweeted telling everyone that Equity was going on a pro-Palestinian march to support, as he put it, the Palestinian comrades. And they then went on this march carrying the Equity banner, representing all their members, surrounded by the most hideous, awful anti-Semitic placards. And I think we've all heard what happened. It was in the news. He then, following this, the General Secretary released a statement where he condemns the disproportionate actions committed by the Israeli government. Now, there was no mention of Hamas, no mention of the other side of the conflict. There was no mention of his Jewish members, how he was going to combat anti-Semitism. So, as you can imagine, this created a huge upset amongst Jewish members, Israeli members, people who supported the other side, who couldn't take, you know, one side of this stance. There was absolutely no need for them to get involved in this situation at all. They've never got themselves involved in anything like this before. So I had a lot of Jewish members and Israeli members contacting me who were devastated. You know, Israeli members were telling me this was their homeland. They were being asked to sign a petition to introduce sanctions to their homeland. A lot of us left. I was the chair of the Brighton and Sussex branch. I left, Dame Maureen Lipman left. As we know, we've heard from Tracy. Tracy really supported us. She went on Newsnight with lots of newspaper articles. There was no real apology, just statements came out trying to justify what they did. One thing that's very sad as well is that Equity had a safe space statement, which they talked about how if you go into a rehearsal room, we've all got to be safe and support each other and leave our differences outside the door. And if we have different religions or creeds or race, whatever, you know, that would leave it behind. If there's any instances of bullying, please report it to Equity. And the fact that now the Jewish members are feeling, well, how can we report anything when they've shown people how they feel? If we had an anti-Semitic comment made about us, how are we going to report that when they've gone on this march against Jewish people, against Israel? So that's basically where we were at with Equity. And it's a very, very sad situation.
You left and nothing happened. There was no apology at all.
No, just statements kept coming out trying to justify what they did. They had a whole list of questions and answers on their website, which didn't really refer to anything. Nobody really could understand why this happened. It would be nice, you know, if they reached out to us and said, look, we're really sorry for what we did. We understand the hurt and upset that we've caused, and we will learn from this. And this is something that happened later, actually. There was two very great people, Judith Ornstein and her husband, Jed Ornstein, who organised a letter that was signed by over 300 people. This was an open letter to the General Secretary explaining how the hurt and the upset that they had been caused, and asking for them to reach out and maybe go on anti-Semitic training just to realise what they'd done. But nothing came of that. And any the UK Lawyers for Israel also contacted them to say that maybe you've breached some of your own rules by going against certain groups in your union. And again, they didn't get a reply. So this is where we're at. So why would I want to be in a union that treats Jewish members like that?
Have you formed your own union?
No. We looked at it. We thought about it. We talked about it. But it's a very hard process, as you can imagine, to do that. It would take a lot of time. But if there is enough interest for people what would be interested in joining, then obviously, yes, that's something we could look at. The other option is to look at existing unions and see if they would be prepared to take on creative people as well. So that's something that we need to look at. But that is still in the pipeline. It's the ongoing negotiations. But it's like I say, it's a very sad situation that we don't feel safe in our own union that's supposed to protect us and look after us.
It is awful. Was it hard to make that stand? And I don't know if you also want to talk about it, Louisa, but would you say it's hard for us to stand up for ourselves?
Mm. It's interesting sort of listening to Adam talk about, you know, the idea of falsettos and what happened with him 2 years ago. And why are we, certainly I speak as an actor, why are we as actors and people, other jobs within the industry, why are we so frightened of speaking out? And I think in a way, the supply and demand, I'm speaking as an actor now, but the supply and demand is so unbalanced that if we start making a fuss, if we start being annoying, troublesome, a bit outspoken, the loud Jewish ones, they'll just cast someone else. There's enough other people out there. And so, you know, I certainly felt with what happened at the Royal Court, you know, when I first heard about it and I saw, because Arthur Darvill is a friend of mine, I know him, and I saw that he was playing this character, Herschel Fink, and my first reaction was, ugh, another Jewish play that I've not been seen for. And then obviously it started coming out and reading more about it, and you sort of go, it's so deeply disappointing. And I feel, for me, I grew up with no real Jewish education. I was brought up in a very non-Jewish area. My mother is a Holocaust survivor. So we were always brought up not to be different, to blend in and to not make a noise. And yes, our surname was a bit complicated to spell. And yes, we had curly hair, but we were not different to everyone else where we were. And so for me, being Jewish is very much based within the background of 20th century history, persecution, Holocaust, and subsequently Israel, politics. Now I live in a Jewish community. I live in an area. My kids have a Jewish identity. And I suppose in a way that's made me feel like it's time to stand up and fight. And there's more people now, people like you, Adam, and Murray, and Tracy Ann, and you, Nicole, everyone, you know, that people in the public eye can stand up and say is not good enough. And if that means I'll never work at the Royal Court, I mean, I've not worked at the Royal Court in 20 years, so I don't know why I'm thinking I might now, but you know, it's sort of, you think, okay, actually, I'd rather be somebody who can stand up and say it's actually not good enough anymore. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I completely agree with that. And I also remember, I think I messaged you, Louisa, when we were talking about this a few months ago. And
yeah.
Jewish people will support each other. We do come together. We have to help each other. And this is why we have strength in numbers. You know, you're not standing on your own. We are there to be there for each other. And, you know, and the fact that, like I said, when all this happened and Tracy, you know, she went straight onto Newsnight and she went out and supported us, which was fantastic, because that's what we need, because she is a warrior. She's just, you know, she's great. You know, I love her to bits for what she did. And that's what we need, because otherwise it might have just gone away. Oh, a few people, he's moaning. What's he moaning about?
I agree. But also, I think there's a younger generation of Jewish actors, performers within the industry who are, I mean, you can cut this if you want, who I think have the potential to be quite woke and to be quite sort of turning on themselves and going, I'm Jewish, but I don't want to stand with Israel. I don't want to stand with Zionism. And actually, you know, as a white, middle-class, cisgendered, this and that, and I just happen to be Jewish, but I've married. And actually, I think there comes a point when we as a Jewish community do need to stick together and be proud of being Jewish and to say whatever our beliefs, whatever our religious beliefs, whatever our political beliefs, we happen to be Jewish. I personally believe it's a gift to be born Jewish, and I personally believe I'm very proud. And I think, you know, there's coming a point now where either we're being outed or we are coming out. And in a way, I think this Royal Court situation is an opportunity that can be really taken in a positive light, and that conversations are starting to happen, and that people like Vicky Featherstone are open to discussions. And who knows, maybe there will be some great plays that aren't necessarily all about being Jewish, but just a Jewishy. I don't know.
And will it star Jewish actors?
And will star Jewish actors? I mean, I have a really complicated relationship with that, because I would always hope to get seen for Jewish parts. But at the same time, I would always hope that the best person gets the job. And it's gone against me in the past that people who aren't Jewish have got the jobs, and that drives me crazy. But then there's also been times when what I would then be excluded from other parts because I'm not something. I don't know. I'm confused about that. I don't know where I stand on the casting of it. I would always hope that if there are Jewish characters, that they would absolutely see Jewish actors, for sure. And inevitably, I would imagine that probably the best person would be Jewish, because it's something inherent in their soul, in their experiences, in their upbringing, that they would be able to bring the best thing to the part.
I just wanted to speak to the idea of oath, you know, not that I'm that young, but I think I do exist in a lot of progressive spaces. And I suppose the thing I want to say out loud, which I think is harder to say on Twitter, is I don't always think it's, you know, and don't shoot me down in the first moments of this, but like, I don't think it's as binary as saying, you know, you're either sticking with the Jews or you're against them, because I think one of the things that I found really tricky about this is that by speaking to the Royal Court, people have then come to me and said, well, you're probably there to immunize them and defend them and be a kind of as a Jew and be someone who can kind of essentially, you could be like a helpful Trotskyite who can just kind of help support their narrative. And I think one of the things that's come into my mind is like, we deserve the ability to have our own communal complexities with regards to all of these issues. So like, I think as a community, we're able to have different political beliefs. We're able to have, you know, different. The thing that I find lacking is the ability to be allowed complexity. As a minority, it's like you have to identify as a certain type of Jew, and that means you're accepted in certain spaces, or you identify as another type of Jew, and that means you're accepted in other spaces. And I think there are, you know, I think I almost certainly exist somewhere in the middle. I have been to Israel. I have loved my experiences of being there. I have complicated experiences about the government there. I think that that's an allowed. I think I see myself as left wing. I did not vote for Corbyn, but I felt complexities around that. But I think there's an interesting thing that happens sometimes, which in enlisting and kind of bringing together of the Jewish community, what is then asked on both sides is a kind of linearity of what Jews are. And I think that sometimes I feel that, you know, when I'm speaking to the Royal Court, that in some ways is alienating me from another type of Jew. And if I'm speaking to another type of Jew, that alienates from them. And one of the things I've found on Twitter is that I've been receiving harmful messages, I suppose, from both sides. People who say, oh, well, if you're helping them, you are anti-Israel, which I'm not. or if you're, you know, if you're helping them, you must be immunizing them. And I suppose, I don't know, there's no easy answer to all of this, but I would call myself pragmatic. I would call myself a dramaturg and a theatre director mostly in within these conversations. And I am pragmatic to the fact that I want complexity. And it's funny because Twitter is the opposite of complexity. It's slogans and banners and kind of like simplistic things. And that's, I think that's why Twitter can only ever be part of anyone's kind of communications practice. I suppose what I'm feeling at the moment is I think we all, myself included, by the way, I don't always succeed at this. Nicole will know, but like, I think good faith reading of one another as a community, despite our differences, is important. And I think I don't know. I said my thing that I said very, very early on when I did have a first conversation with the Royal Court is please don't make me and my colleagues the only people you're talking to, because I don't want the burden of being the only Jews you're talking to. I don't want the burden of my particular worldview being cast as the worldview of the right type of Jew. I think in some ways I exist in a political alignment that makes me somewhat naturally nearer where the Royal Court lives all the time, which is almost more painful for me because it feels like I don't belong in that space at all, despite caring about intersectionality, which I do, and I do care about minority inclusion and across the board. I do care about this discourse and I feel excluded from it. But I suppose what I would say is, in wanting to have conversations that feel intersectional, which I know can be a word that some people hear and go, oh, what a load of old rubbish. But like, in wanting to have those conversations, I feel there are some parts of the Jewish community that then come back and say, well, you're not fighting for us, when by goodness, I'm really trying to situate myself where I am and with all open-heartedness and intelligence for where I stand. I don't see myself as having the answers, I suppose, but I fiercely see myself as Jewish, and I agree with everything you're saying, Louisa and Murray, everything.
You know, I think that there is a such a lack of, whether it be education, desire for education on this. I think that we all live, actually, Murray, I know you live in Brighton, but we all live, you know, we live in a city where there are communities of different religions, races, and it's a relatively tolerant place, let's be honest. You go outside of these big cities, people have never met Jews before. I've been to places where I remember talking to a girl and she was like, oh, I've never met a Jew before. And I said, yeah, you have. And she looked at me and she went, are you a Jew? And it was this sort of, and it wasn't meant in any way aggressively, anti-Semitically. It was just like, wow, you're a Jew. Like, you don't look like one. I don't know what she was expecting, but it's like, you know, the horns weren't there, whatever. And again, you know, I recently had an experience where somebody said to me, like, the most disgusting anti-Semitic things, but it came from ignorance. And it came from just like, well, that's what I read in a book. And you go, it's not the right books you're reading or whatever it is. You're not understanding it. And I think that we can get stuck in our little bubbles of theatre world, London, cities, middle class, whatever, wherever we are, I don't know. And I think that what needs to change is educating people. I don't think people realise the tiny, tiny percentage of the population that we make up. And actually, we are smaller than the Sikh community. We are one of the tiniest communities. We, you know, security-wise, I read like something that Tracy was saying the other day about, you know, lots of people don't realise that there's security on every Jewish school in this country. And there is, when I send my kids to Haida at the weekend, we all have to put bulletproof vests on and do our time outside the shul to protect our kids. And I think people wouldn't believe that. A lot of people might not believe that if they heard all of that.
And they really don't realise that we have to have security at Jewish schools, like I said, at Haida's, at the shuls. Now, I just go about what you were saying about the cities. I grew up in Gants Hill, which in Ilford, which was very Jewish in once upon a time. And it was also very multicultural. So it was great because I got to meet lots of different cultures. And moving down here, I go into a rehearsal room or even a meeting, whatever, equity meeting. And it's very I notice the lack of Jews down here. It is very unusual. People are curious and they have the questions and they don't understand because, like you said, they read books. They get these ideas from there. That's not the right books because they don't really understand what's going on. It's not taught in schools. Judaism is not taught well in schools at all. People, they don't understand the religion. They fear it. They don't know what it's all about. And at the end of the day, let's say we're normal people. We don't have the horns. We're nice people. We want to get on with everyone. So we've got that constant. It's like I've have a constant battle, you know, trying to say, you know, this is me, I'm okay, and I'm proud to be Jewish, you know, and we shouldn't be ashamed of it, we shouldn't have to.
And it's also, I mean, it's sort of what, Nicole, you said in your email earlier to us of this idea, this new phrase, which I've only just heard, sort of white passing, which is so strange and quite horrible, I find, that this sort of idea that we can pass as English or whatever, you know. And people often say as a compliment, you don't look Jewish.
I think that interestingly, obviously, the idea of white passing is, it's tricky in both ends as well, because on the one hand, there's a sense of obvious privilege that comes with being able to pass, but then an obvious sense of alienation from a discourse around racism, because I think there's a, you know, a pretty commonly held view that racism is largely based on visible differences. And I think there's a complexity to that, which is tough. I remember during Falsettos, when I was speaking out on it and when I was receiving allyship from other minorities, and it was the first time I remember feeling not white. I felt white passing. I felt the passing part of white passing, because I suddenly felt like I didn't belong within, you know, sort of the white systems that existed. But then I also didn't feel necessarily entitled to be part of the other kind of systemic anti-racism going on. And you know, that's always been a trope about Jews. We can pass, which means we can hide, which means that there's something sneaky about that ability to hide, or there's something kind of disingenuous about that ability to hide.
It has negative connotations. The idea white passing, for me personally, feels like exactly as you say, you can hide, you can sneak through, or you're not taken for who you are.
And there's there's a kind of an insidiousness built as a trope to that idea that you can hide in plain sight, and that there's a sort of espionage feel to that phrase, which is that there's you're not there honestly. And once your existence within certain spaces is kind of framed as dishonest, then everything else that's sort of attached to that in terms of contemporary politics and discourse becomes almost impossible, because people don't read you in good faith. And I think that's the thing I will sort of keep saying lately, which is that, like, how do we create spaces where Jewish conversation and inclusion and kind of opinion is kind of framed in good faith rather than bad faith? Because I so often think that by the time you even start having the conversation, there's already a perception that that you don't belong even in the conversation, let alone in the space. And Jews are good at conversation. So
it's going back to bringing it back to the Royal Court and talking about that, you know, the fact that we might not look different, but certainly, you know, our names, and it goes back to the Royal Court of what's in a name, this idea of Herschel Fink, you know, people look at my name and go, oh, Klein, that's interesting. That's an interesting way of spelling it. Where's that from? And, you know, how do you pronounce Hecht? You know, how is it? Whatever. It's,
and I always have the conversation about, yes, it's Jewish. I always get that in.
Do yeah. you?
I'm proud of that.
That's
absolutely
interesting. So I've always hidden it for so many really? Years. Oh, it's oh, Eastern
you should,
European.
You should be proud. Yes, no, you should be so proud.
I am now, yeah. But yeah. I think, you know, and then it goes back to this idea of Herschel Fink, and again, as an actor, when you get a character, the first thing you do is you look at their name and you think, oh, that's an interesting name, I wonder where its origins are. And, you know, as that's how you begin building a character. So I think that, and then the fact that changing the name is what our ancestors did. I'm sure that Lenson was once Lensinski, or
I think Levinson, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Levinson, yeah. exactly.
The Royal Court had signed up with an anti-racism organisation called Sour Lemons, and yet they still managed to completely miss the Herschel Fink connotations. Is this an example of what David Baddiel calls Jews don't count, or is this because they saw racism purely in terms of skin colour?
Yes, I think the Herschel Fink thing has been very upsetting, because it's been a perfect example of progressive left theatres who have completely ignored any idea of anti-Semitism. It just didn't register on their Richter scale. And unfortunately, the Royal Court has been seen for many years as a not particularly safe space for all Jews. as a lot of theatre hasn't. I mean, the number of Jewish actors, young Jewish actors, who say they go into rehearsal spaces and hide their Mogin Dovids because they don't want to be asked about Israel, they don't want to be asked about their opinions on the Palestinians, they don't want to be asked if they consider themselves a Zionist, they just don't want to get into all of that. And it's wrong that that is the first question that they should get into. And as I always say, I wouldn't expect my Chinese counterparts, fellow Chinese actors, to walk into a room, a rehearsal room, and, you know, almost instantaneously have to talk about the Uyghurs and China and what their position is on it, and it's wrong. So Vicky Featherstone, the artistic director of the Royal Court, reached out to me about a year ago and said that, in the light of everything that had happened, and after following me on social media and seeing the abuse and the fights that I had gotten into and standing up to the left, the progressive left that could never see itself as anti-Semitic because it stands for non-prejudice and anti-racism, she wanted to see if I would collaborate on a piece of work that would bring that story to the Royal Court, which for me was mind-blowing because that is exactly the sort of theatre that I think a lot of Jews wouldn't think would be a particularly safe space for Jews that hadn't passed the left's political purity test. And so that's been an ongoing conversation. And I really have to say props to Vicky, because she totally understood the optics of how the Royal Court appeared to a vast majority of the Jewish community. And she really wanted to address that, and she understood a lot of the hurt that had gone on with the petition years and with the conflation of being pro-Palestinian but allowing pro-Palestinian activism to bleed into a certain anti-Semitic vernacular. You understand what I mean, Nicole. You know, all Jews are rich, Zionist conspiracies, Rothschilds. You know, when petition, which was the play that had been championed by the Royal Court, had lines like "the road to Golgotha is lined with tax-deductible fur-lined dugouts on Park Avenue." It was a very, you know, it was an anti-Semitic play that basically took that bit of history that said Jews, Zionists, collaborated with Nazis in order to set up the State of Israel, which is like saying that the National Front were pro the black community here because they offered to give them the tickets to go back home. I mean, it's a nonsense. And it was a really nasty play. And with all the furore that went on afterwards, Ken Loach accused the Zionist community of stifling him. And, it was a nasty, nasty episode in the Royal Court's history. And I don't ever think they've really thrown the taint of that off. So Vicky, you know, did reach out. And then obviously with the Herschel Finks, so soon after their workshops on unconscious bias and racism, she totally gets the hurt and upset that she's caused. And so she and I have been talking about what we can do to give people who have experienced anti-Semitism on the left and who have been gaslit for many years, like myself, being told that when we talk about anti-Semitism, we don't mean anti-Semitism. What we really mean is we don't want to pay more taxes, or what we really mean is that we work for the Israeli government, or what we really mean is we just wanted to destroy poor Jeremy Corbyn. And when we said we were hurt by Nazi murals, it wasn't because it was about anti-Semitism, it was because we wanted to murder Palestinian babies, all this stuff. And she totally understands that when you have been a victim of anti-Semitism and been told for many years by your progressive friends that it is impossible, that you can't really mean that, and be interpreted and not being allowed to be heard in your own voice, she feels that very strongly. And then the combination of this Herschel Finck tied into that, I think she's taking her responsibility as the artistic director of the Royal Court at this moment very seriously, and she understands that if she can lead the way on this, all other organisations such as Equity and other theatres that have caused huge hurt to their Jewish members, a majority of their Jewish members, will have to take stock as well.
I'll never know what the conversation was behind the doors, and I'd be fascinated to know how it got to this point.
My major hope is that I might get to be, regardless of any of the, you know, I'm not a I'm not an expert on anti-bias training or inclusion training. I'm a theatre maker, but I think my major hope is that I might get to be part of curating some sort of oral history. I mean, I want to speak to anyone who was involved, everyone at every level. I mean, I'm kind of interested in those conversations as a kind of piece of documentary and what comes out of those conversations. But those are the questions I want to ask. And, you know, I think a lot of people within that process are willing to have those conversations.
Are they? Because there must be people there who are ashamed.
Yeah, but I think
people, you know, actors who have got cast in a great job and sat in a rehearsal room and had brilliant rehearsals and chats and, you know, and it didn't cross their mind.
Agreed. And I think undoubtedly there is shame there. I can't speak to that for a fact, but of course there will be. And shame often leads to defensiveness and often leads to closing the door. I suppose what I'm noticing is there's a desire, from what I'm hearing, there's a desire to lead with that shame rather than hide. And that could lead to, you know, some answers about, you know, where people's heads were and why their heads were there. And I think that could be, you know, valuable in terms of learning about what might come next.
I mean, we all agree it was an awful situation, but I think if something's come of this, thanks to your hard work and everyone else's fault, it, and hopefully, you know, lessons are learnt and it won't happen again.
The word being used by the Royal Court is that they're aspiring for this to be a watershed moment for the way Judaism is understood in theatre. I think they're at a high enough level that if they honestly keep sticking to that and they keep living with that pain and that shame and they keep pushing through into action, which is, by the way, not going to take a week or a month, it's going to take years and going to involve a lot of digging back through their past and a lot of other things like that. But if they can be made to stick to that intention, and you know, sometimes we have really good intentions and we don't stick to them, but I do see that the good can outweigh the harm here. When it comes to Sour Lemons, the organization who were working on this, I suppose what I would say is they work at the intersection. You know, they've been pretty straightforward about saying they work specifically around anti-Black racism and also other very specific types of inclusion. Now, I look at that and I go, I think they made a mistake in calling themselves an anti-racism company. I think they're disingenuous in their name and the way that they frame things. But actually, if you take a closer glance at the people that work there and the things that they're fighting for just a more restricted series of inclusions than potentially their titling leads to. So the reason that they obviously felt very wrong-footed, which I'm amongst the people who was very angry at the fact that an anti-racism organization let us down in this way. But I think the reason that they initially felt defensive and wrong-footed is because they were like, oh, we only thought that we were here for these things. And someone's telling us we should have been doing this other thing all along. And there was just a lot of confusion, you know, if I'm being charitable to them, about that idea of what their place was.
But there's probably no one Jewish within Sour Lemons, is there?
I think a member of their board is, if I'm right, but that actually... No, I think within their practitioners group.
Essentially, as you say, it was set up as an anti-Black racist.
Well, another forms of intersectional inclusion, but like it's not an extensive list. So, for example, BC, British and Southeast Asian inclusion is not part of their predominant lived experiences and activities. For example, as another type of minority. So there are seats at the table that are missing that are not just Jewish.
They wouldn't have let something go through.
I don't know. The way in which I'm not being an apologist for them. I'm really thinking about it with complexity, which is I think there are a lot of seats at that table missing. And I agree that there are very specific ways in which anti-Semitism is missed. I agree that there are very specific ways in which anti-Semitism is like left unchecked and often doesn't count in terms of our ability to define our own sense of what racism is. But I guess if I were to be not charitable but constructive, I would say there are a number of seats at that table that are missing. And actually, I think they've misframed themselves as an anti-racism company. And that dovetails with the idea that like anti-racism in the progressive left has seats missing, often Jews, and maybe other seats. I suppose the question going forward for them is, do they add more seats to their table? Possible. Do they rebrand? And my sense is we need to be really, really careful if we call ourselves or our discourse anti-racist, that we've got as many seats at the table as we possibly bloody can. Because I think the risk of it is anti-racism isn't just one thing. It's like,
forgive maybe my idealism here, but I don't even think it needs a massive community, a massive sort of company like Sauerland or anything to sort of take a step back and go, this is really anti-Semitic.
I agree.
I don't think it needs a big sort of sitting around the table going, no, I think it's a, you know, into discussion. This is. And this is complicated, but it is quite obvious.
And I sort of do buy the idea that there is, I guess, what I would call a mixture of a humongous blind spot and a belief in some of the anti-Semitic tropes, like an actual belief in some of the anti-Semitic tropes in terms of like the sort of the insidiousness of being white passing, the kind of the fact that Jews are rich, the fact that Jews are comfortable, the fact that Jews are privileged, the fact that like de facto, all of those things. I think those beliefs and tropes link with the idea of progressive anti-racist discourse. But I wonder if this is an alarm bell to that, as was David Baddiel's book, as was, you know, some of the stuff that's been coming around the corner. And I suppose I'm, again, in my like role as constructive person, I'm trying to believe that if I can get Jewish voices more seats at more tables, rather than breaking all the tables, that's currently where I am. Don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely happy to break some tables.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I kind of have a vision of sort of almost sort of Larry David-esque conversations going of what's anti-Semitic with a bunch of Jews going, well, could we get away with Herschel Finger? You know, it's sort of, it's almost got to that extreme for discussions like this to happen. And I agree. I think it's a great thing that these discussions are now happening.
It has been a very unpleasant time, but do you think, any of you, that we could take any positives out of this situation?
I think this could be seen as a very positive moment. I think it is a boil that has been building for years. And the very, as I said to her, and we, you know, we've met a load of times since Herschel Fink and spoken. In fact, I think we met twice yesterday. We had two meetings yesterday with various people. They're bringing people to the table that would never normally have a voice at the Royal Court. And she is taking her responsibility very seriously. I think it is a positive thing. And I think we can only see it as a positive thing because I think actors should be able to play anything. We know that. But in a time where there is such sensitivity around minorities being played by people not of that minority or being written about by people not of that minority, cultural appropriation, then we have to give the same sensitivity and importance to Jewish actors. So I think we need to look at the type of actors we're employing at the moment to play those roles. We need to look at the stories that we're telling. We need to change the Jewish narratives and the characters that we see. I think we can have, you know, so many things are coming out of the conversation. The type of Jewish characters we're seeing on stage, the type of Jewish stories that we're seeing on stage, all this stuff needs to change. And I think Vicky feels the responsibility to be at the front of that, which is kind of a really good thing. Because he could very easily, like Equity, have turned around and gone, ooh, soz, but, you know, that's only a small percentage of our community, and we know that we're right, so we didn't really mean it, so bye. But she isn't. She's putting her hands up and going, I am really, truly sorry, as are all my staff, for any hurt that has been caused on our watch. And I think Paul Fleming and Maureen Beattie of Equity should sit up and take notice of this, because that is how you handle hurting a community, a vast majority of your community.
We can all try, and we're all fighting our corner, and if we can make one little change, just something changes, you know, someone thinks, oh, we shouldn't call this person Herschel Fink or another name that happens in the future, or we shouldn't go on this march because it might offend people or anything like that, then, you know, just one person, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, that we've done something. But it's a hard slog, it really is. We have to keep fighting, we have to keep putting our heads out there. We can't just sit back and let it happen, because now people are having these conversations, which is what we need.
I personally selfishly feel like I'm making connections within my Jewish community of this theatre world, acting world. You know, the entertainment industry is known to have a big Jewish contingency, isn't it? From Hollywood right through. And it's this country, for some reason, I think sometimes is more nervous to stand up and say, I'm Jewish. And I think that we're coming out. And I think for me, selfishly, I'm really appreciating making contacts like you three and other people. And I think that I look forward to maintaining and these relationships and conversations.
I agree, completely agree, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. Conversation, good. conversation is good, isn't it? I mean, I suppose ever since Falsettos, I was hoping for systemic change that makes me feel that Jewish artists feel more safe within the creation of art. And I think that thus can be part of telling Jewish stories and being part of the cultural weave of the country and our highest institutions. And that's a long journey. The journey towards what I would call, like, you know, for the system to change, it's going to take a long, long time. But everything's a brick in the wall, right? And this feels like several bricks in terms of the way it's moved the conversation forward. And as I said, I just want to be free to kind of think about things with the same complexity that and time and space that other minorities have been given in the past few years. I mean, yeah. I just to be fair to say that it's only recently that anyone's been given the chance to kind of speak about anything, and that these conversations start to happen. One of the things I said at the beginning of Falsetto Gate that we, Sarah and I, wrote in the initial letter was, this isn't us having a new conversation. It's part of the same conversation, and the conversation to be meaningfully included in stories about you and being able to tell stories as part of the culture of the country that you live in. And I think little by little we're inching towards that place. And frankly, I hope this leads to more Jewish work being put on and more stories being told.
If I think of, like, certain things in America, certain television programs in America, something springs to mind, Transparent. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah,
it is so Jewish, but nothing about it talks about being Jewish. It's just intrinsically Jewish, and that is part of it. And I wish that we could have more things in this country that have a sort of the baseline is Jewish, without everyone coming on going, oy vavoy, nasty, let's all go upstairs and schlep. And do you know what I mean? Let's be honest, there's certain Jewish programs that we've just had in this country that sort of shoehorn the Yiddish in because we're Jewish. And actually, as you say, Adam, I really long for the time when there are subtleties in our Jewishness, as opposed to a kind of, you know, that just being the baseline, being Jewish.
And all the stereotypes, like you said.
Every time the industry is sort of embarrassed and forced into one of these conversations, you know, I start out angry, and then then it leads to a kind of, hopefully, a constructiveness about what's next. And I'm sure the cycle will repeat. I'm sure there will be more rage and more anger and more calling out and more activism, and then more, hopefully, positive. And I'm feeling in an optimistic mood. I can't say how long it will last, but I'm trying to hold on to it.
Thank you for your time. I know we could talk about this for hours. Maybe we could come together in a year's time to see if anything has changed. Thank you for listening to the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, Genesis Philanthropy Group is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. Thanks go to my brilliant guests this week, Tracy Ann Omerman, Louisa Klein, Adam Lentzen, and Murray Hecht. Thank you so much. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episodes or be informed of any new episodes when they become available. Don't forget that for any information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you on this or on anything else on editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Nicole Lampert, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Thank you and goodbye.